Can I congratulate you on your 52 minutes of office so far, and to wish you very well in the year ahead. I know that you've taken over from John Preston, and I'm sure he set a high bar, but you will have no difficulty in reaching it as well, and doing an excellent job on behalf of CIOT. And I'm very pleased that you did explain the steam train link, potentially, between Heather and I. Otherwise, I think people would have been perhaps a little concerned about that, as they should have been listening to the remarks. Now, Ray, you're already a familiar figure to the Treasury Committee, having given evidence in your former role of Deputy President, particularly in the context of the committee's scrutiny of the budget. And your evidence has reflected your long experience as an HMRC inspector and its predecessor department, the Inland Revenue. And your experience was in private practice and your interest was in professional standards. And I'd also like to thank, as I say, John, for his contribution to the work of the committee and in particular his readiness to share his valuable insights into issues concerning the tax profession and your clients. Now, I thought tonight I would talk about the Treasury Committee, our role in carrying out the scrutiny function on behalf of Parliament, and where I see the committee and the tax profession having overlapping interests and concerns. Now, a large part of the work of the House of Commons and the House of Lords takes place in committees. The Commons Select Committees carry out the scrutiny function of the House, and they examine the impact and implementation of policy, scrutinise the work and expenditure of government, and examine proposals for legislation. And some of you may have seen the second edition of the Evening Standard this evening, where the Governor of the Bank of England has made the headlines based on evidence that he gave to the Select Committee this morning. And that is one of the ways in which the Select Committees, not just ours, but across the piece, carry out very valuable scrutiny work, scrutinising those bodies when it says in a bill that the X body is going to be accountable to Parliament or held account by Parliament, it's often via the Select Committees that scrutiny and accountability is delivered. Now, as some of you will know, membership of the Select Committees obviously reflects the party political balance in the House. Committee chairs are elected by MPs from across the whole House, apart from those ministers in the department which we scrutinise. And then individual parties will elect or appoint their own committee members. This is a relatively recent change to the way in which committees are formed. And I think some may say that it has helped to invigorate committees and to give us a more independent voice. And of course, undoubtedly, last year's general election result, and I take the point that a year ago we were busy fighting elections while you were here listening to panel members. I think the result of the election, where the government doesn't have a majority per se, means that actually the power, as one of my colleagues has said, has passed from the cabinet room to the floor of the House of Commons. Anybody who knows anything about whips offices and government will know that's not a comfortable place for most governments to be, but I have to say we and the Select Committees are enjoying it enormously. Now, as I say, most committees are linked to a particular government department. So the Treasury Committee examines the expenditure, administration and policy of the Treasury and HMRC and their associated public bodies, including, as I say, the Bank of England and the Financial Conduct Authority. Other committees have a more overarching portfolio, such as the Public Accounts Committee. Now, the Treasury Committee also undertakes certain core tasks on behalf of the House, and that includes the pre-appointment hearings, pre-legislative scrutiny, and scrutiny of the department's estimates and annual report. But our time is largely spent on inquiries of the committee's own choosing. Depending on the subject, external deadlines, and the amount of oral evidence the committee decides to take, an inquiry can last for several months and give rise to a report to the House, but other inquiries might just consist of a single day's oral evidence, which the committee may publish without making a report. So I would say at this point, if there are issues that you think the committee should be looking into, there are sessions coming up where you think questions can usefully be asked of witnesses, then without overloading our inboxes, we would always be extremely interested in hearing those suggestions. As I say, committees are very much the engine room of Parliament. Now, debates in the Chamber are great for raising issues of concern, but they're generally not, don't last long enough, they don't have enough detail to really get into an issue in great depth, and I think that'll particularly apply in the case of detailed tax policy. We have the power to call witnesses and to take written and oral evidence, and that means, as I say, we can drill down into the detail and shine a light on the real impact that government policy or the actions of a particular government department or a particular institution have on people's lives. And I do think that the committees have a really crucial role in holding responsible parties to account, whether that's government ministers, officials, heads of regulatory bodies overseen by our departments, Treasury in our case, or even the entities for which those regulators are responsible. There is nothing to rival hearing explanations straight from the horse's mouth to get to the bottom of an issue. And appearing before a committee can be a powerful incentive for the subject of an inquiry to get their act together and sort problems out. It's quite amazing how much evidence or resolution happens just before a chief executive has to give evidence to the committee. Now, obviously, our questioning, hopefully if we're doing it right, can lead to dramatic scenes and forthright examples of views. But actually, it is the information volunteered to us by people and organisations and experts responding to calls for evidence that provide a solid base for, we hope, thorough, thoughtful, reasoned and detailed scrutiny that can lead to real change for the better. What is the Treasury Select Committee up to at the moment? Well, if you look on our page on parliament.uk, you will see that there are an awful lot of open inquiries and an awful lot of things for us to deal with, which you would expect, perhaps, at the start of a parliament. Let me just mention some of our inquiries that give a flavour of what we do. So the remit of the Treasury and HMRC and their associated bodies, such as the Bank of England and the FCA, is obviously extremely broad. So there is scope for our inquiries to be very wide-ranging. And we could easily spend our time focusing entirely on the actions of those departments or bodies. But when I was running for chair and I had to campaign against five fellow Conservative members of Parliament, I think it's fitting to say, in light of the panel this evening, that I am the first ever female chair of the Treasury Select Committee. I ran against five men. Enough said. So, when I was running, I was very keen that the committee should be more consumer-facing. So in this Parliament, we've launched inquiries into student loans, household finances and childcare policy. And I think those are some of the issues that have concerned to our constituents as members of Parliament, but I strongly suspect to you as individuals, but hopefully also to many of the clients that you look after. We are, of course, also very concerned by events that cause or could cause harm to the public. So, for example, you will know that we have started an inquiry into what's been happening at TSB in relation to their recent IT migration meltdown, although I think that's not a word that the Chief Executive was terribly happy about us using, because we want to know how TSB got into that position and how they are going to make things right for their customers. And another example is our inquiry into economic crime, where an important strand of that inquiry will focus on the impact that economic crime has on consumers and the way in which the Treasury and its associated bodies is responding to that impact. We've got an inquiry into digital currencies, which is covering how potential regulation of digital currencies should be balanced to provide adequate protection for consumers and businesses without stifling innovation. And we're also taking a broad look at the market for SME finance. We want to take account, obviously, of what happened at RBS and their global restructuring group and other banks as well. But there is a key concern about whether the current regulatory framework provides appropriate protection to SMEs when they borrow money. Our banks are a critical source of financing and liquidity for our small and medium-sized enterprises in this country. And I am concerned, and many of you will work with different finance houses and those offering funding, but I am concerned when I hear some of our SMEs saying that they will never approach a bank again for money. That, to me, says that there is potentially a problem, certainly in terms of trust between banks and small and medium-sized enterprises who we need to grow in order to have a successful economy. So I can't really get much further throughout this lecture at the moment without talking about the dreaded B word, and that, of course, is Brexit. So you wouldn't be surprised to know that we have an ongoing inquiry into the UK's economic relationship with the European Union. I suspect we may possibly get onto that in the Q&A about the opportunities for or challenges of tax policy as a result of our decision to leave the EU. But we do want to make sure that there is good information available to Parliament so that when MPs get a final vote on the final deal, they are properly informed when called upon to make those decisions. Now, as tax advisers, I suspect that you are most keenly interested in the Treasury Committee's tax inquiries. Now, we are in the early stages of a main committee inquiry into VAT, and there are also two subcommittee inquiries. The subcommittee is chaired by my colleague from the Labour benches, John Mann, who is a long-standing Treasury Select Committee member. And the subcommittee is looking into tax avoidance and evasion, and the other inquiry is into the conduct of tax inquiries and the resolution of tax disputes. Now, for all these inquiries, the window to submit evidence closes at the end of May, and I hope that if you feel that you would like to contribute, you'll be able to do so. Please don't feel that you need to send in reams of paper and reams of evidence. That's, of course, appreciated. But actually just short, sharp, consumer-focused evidence, or your evidence of your dealings with different bodies, particularly HMRC, would be extremely valuable. And our VAT inquiry is a continuation of the committee's earlier inquiry into the shifting sands of UK tax policy and the tax base. You will know that VAT contributes over a fifth of the UK's total tax take, around £124 billion last year. But HMRC's tax gap figures suggest that around £12.6 billion is not collected. Now, I put that in context. When I was Secretary of State for Education, our schools budget was £40 billion. So that is a quarter of our schools budget, roughly, that is not collected in relation to VAT. So we want to explore why the VAT base appears to be so vulnerable and why VAT appears to present particular challenges to HMRC to collect. Now, allied to the question of sustainability, the committee wants to examine how VAT measures up against the committee's principles for good tax policy, that a tax should be fair, should support growth and encourage competition, provide certainty, be practicable, and be coherent. Now, considering the overlap between these principles and CIOT's aims and objectives, I am sure you will agree that this is a goal worth striving for. And I'm also sure that you'll be under no illusions about the challenges in actually getting there. Because you all know about the peculiar vagaries of the VAT system. For years, non-tax people, and probably quite a few tax people as well, have been bemused by whether it should matter if a Jaffa cake is a cake or a biscuit. And yet these old conundrums keep surfacing. I think many MPs are scarred by the example of the pasty tax, for example. Now, why is chocolate... I didn't know this until I was very kindly... Anne was helping and very much coordinating this speech. Why is chocolate Nesquik zero-rated, but strawberry and banana Nesquik is standard-rated? Who knew that? Why can a zero-rated gingerbread man have chocolate eyes but not chocolate trousers? Where is the fairness there? I'm very glad you didn't put leather trousers. The serious point is that VAT is notoriously complex, and this leads to costs for business and to the exchequer. And of course, VAT, as I say, is one of the key areas in tax where we can expect Brexit to have an impact. How great an impact, of course, remains to be seen. But there are clearly major concerns for business that need to be properly surfaced and addressed. And I hope that our inquiry will help to do that. And of course, it would be interesting to hear your experiences of how, if you are putting concerns, perhaps CIOT is and has been to government, how those concerns are being responded to. Now, I think it's fair to say that public concern about tax avoidance and evasion reached unprecedented levels in the last 8 years or so. It's certainly something as a Member of Parliament, yes, often coordinated by specific campaign groups, but it really has cut through to the public, to constituents in Loughborough and beyond. I think all MPs would say this, in a way that you wouldn't expect tax policy necessarily to do so. I suspect this comes from the financial crisis and the bailout, particularly of our banks. You know, I still get on the doorsteps, if you're able to bail out the banks, why aren't you able to fund X or Y public service as well as we would like? So the subcommittee's inquiry into tax avoidance and evasion will give us the opportunity to look back over that period and see what changes there have been in the approach of both HMRC and taxpayers, and to evaluate what the effect has been. And the subcommittee is also interested in hearing about how the tax profession has responded to those concerns. Now, I know that CIOT is fully aware of the damage done to the public perception of tax professionals and has taken action to repair any reputational damage. setting out clear standards and of expected ethical behaviour in CIOT's professional conduct in relation to taxation is a positive move forward that I hope will help to restore public confidence, not only in the profession, but in the tax system as a whole. And I think that public confidence is important. You know, people understand the need to pay their taxes as long as they feel that everybody is paying their taxes and that the tax money is being well spent. But we can do something perhaps about the latter bit in Whitehall, but actually that former bit of making sure that people are paying what they should be paying obviously is very much of a mutual endeavour. Now, as I say, the second subcommittee inquiry is going to look in the way that HMRC conducts tax inquiries and resolves tax disputes. And again, I'm very conscious as a member of Parliament that actually I do get HMRC queries raised with me, not just because of having a legal background, but more just frustration at being unable to get through on a telephone to somebody who's actually able to answer the question. I suspect that's a frustration that is shared by some, at least, in this room. But I think, again, it's worth looking at the HMRC, the customer standards, customer service levels that are being delivered. There have been significant changes in HMRC's governance processes, and I think it's now time to look at how those changes are working in practice. And again, this is an area where you as tax professionals will have very valuable insights to share with us. And the overview that our professional body can give of the experience of a broad range of practitioners and clients, from the smallest to the largest, is especially worthwhile. I think what I'm probably getting to, Ray, is the fact that you will be asked, perhaps on behalf of CIOT, with others maybe, to come and give us evidence and the benefit of you, your experience and your members' experience. Now, the subcommittee is also scrutinising HMRC's transformation programme, including its Making Tax Digital plans and its decision to move to regional centres. Again, those might well come up in questions. And of course, tax is a core feature of our regular scrutiny of the Chancellor of the Exchequer and the budget decisions that he makes. And again, we're very grateful to those who post-budget or post-fiscal events send in their analysis of what has been announced and questions they would like to have asked, more detail they would like to see. It really does help in terms of the level of questioning that we are able to carry out. Now, of course, you will know that tax is intertwined with many other issues, and we find that even where tax policy may not be the primary focus of inquiry, it will still feature. For example, tax was a major part of the Treasury Committee's inquiry into the implementation and effectiveness of the government's policy on childcare. And I should mention here the very valuable evidence given to our inquiry by the CIOT's Low Incomes Tax Reform Group, highlighting factual errors and inadequacies in government guidance on accessing tax-free childcare and the complex interactions between the different government policies in this area. This evidence fed directly into our recommendations in the Treasury Committee's March report, and we are now waiting for the government's response. Now, within the wider range of the government's work, I'm sure that there are issues that will touch on the working lives of tax professionals, whether that work concerns a specific behaviour, a specific business sector, such as insurance or banking, or broad themes such as our inquiry into household finances, where we have questioned ministers on the effectiveness and targeting of tax relief on pension contributions and savings. Now, as a former Minister for Women and Equalities, I'm all too aware of the lack of gender diversity in financial services more broadly. So that's why last October, the committee launched our inquiry into women in finance to see how diversity can be improved. And I should say at this point, we've looked obviously specifically at gender diversity, but we're very conscious that there is a much need for a broader look at diversity in financial services too. And I was very pleased last night to be at the launch of something called Diverse City, which has been launched by Helena Morrissey, amongst others, which is looking at how, just generally, financial services, they're particularly talking about investment industry, can broaden access to more people from different backgrounds. So I know that John, throughout his presidency, was keen to promote diversity in the tax profession and has also encouraged other professional bodies to move forward. It's great to see that Heather is here, who's the founder of the Women in Tax Network, and I strongly support the network's aim of making visible the knowledge and experience of women working in tax. And I think that aim resonates very well with the efforts that the committee has made so far to promote a fair representation of women in the witnesses that give evidence to us. Having said that, we always need more diversity, more diverse panels, particularly more women. So please, if you have something to say, please don't hold back from offering to give us evidence. We did have a number of tax professionals who gave us evidence and input into our Women in Finance inquiry. Some of them took part in a formal roundtable discussion with committee members and shared their views on the barriers women face in progressing to senior roles within financial services firms. And we've been holding firms' feet to the fire and getting to sign up to the Treasury's Women in Finance Charter. In February, I wrote to 33 firms in different parts of the financial services sector to ask why they hadn't signed. And for many firms, this opportunity, again, to reflect on their reasons appears to have caused a reassessment, and there were more signatories announced in March. Now, let me just turn briefly to the role of Parliament overall in the making of tax policy, because obviously the development of responsible tax policy does require the responsible exercise of scrutiny by MPs and members of the House of Lords. But to deliver, as I say, effective scrutiny, we do need information, and that requires engagement with those who understand the impact that tax changes will have on wider society, as well as those who can comment on the technical quality of the drafting and whether the legislation works as it is intended to do. Although we might all wish to see a simpler system, tax is complicated. So good consultation during the process of policy development is vital, and I've been assured that government is committed to the principle set out in 2010 to take a more consultative approach. Consultations issued this year suggest that Treasury commitment to early stage consultations is looking promising. And my committee will, of course, be keen to monitor this, and I'm pleased that the Treasury has responded to our recommendation to revive the consultation tracker to help tax professionals and other stakeholders keep track of government proposals and responses. But once new policy starts its journey into law, it's just as important that members of both houses get the information they need to be able to examine government proposals when they reach each house. We need to hear a range of insights and take evidence from informed and reliable sources so that we can then conduct our role properly. So where we'd like to get to? A healthier and better informed understanding of tax policy, where changes are made, a clearer understanding of what those changes are seeking to achieve, and confidence that there are no unintended spillovers. A sustainable tax base with greater certainty both for taxpayers, who should know what they have to pay, and for government, which should be better able to forecast what it will actually receive. And assurance that HMRC is implementing the government's policies effectively. Now, as I said, this is very much a mutual endeavour, because I don't want to take any responsibility away from government, but the tax profession has a vital role in providing the necessary external challenge and insight to help us get there as a society. So your input is highly valued, whether it's made through CIOT or through your firms or as individuals. The CIOT's objectives for, and I quote, a better, more efficient tax system for all affected by it, taxpayers, their advisers, the authorities, certainly resonate with the aims of the committee. And as individual chartered tax advisors, I would encourage you to see providing evidence to the committee as an opportunity to help shape the tax system for the better. And I think to remember that the committee, as I said, finds real-life examples where you can give us about the impact of tax policy or the way in which tax has been administered by HMRC or the experience that your clients have had in dealing with HMRC are really, really absolutely invaluable. Going back to our principles for good tax policy, it's that information that will enable us to judge the true extent to which tax measures are fair, they do support growth, they do provide certainty, they are practicable, and they are coherent. So just let me conclude by saying it's a real pleasure and privilege to be here tonight to send my best wishes to Ray as he's starting out on his tenure as president. Tax really does touch every part of society, and we do need to get it right for the reasons I've suggested. People do feel they have a very personal stake in it. Now, it might be too much to expect us all to agree on what right looks like, but I think that properly informed debate and policy based on sound evidence and subject to effective scrutiny is something that is absolutely worth striving for. So, as I said, the wealth of skills and insight, experience and knowledge within this room tonight, within CIOT, is an invaluable resource for us all, and I hope that we will hear more from you in the months ahead. Thank you.